Hey, welcome back, guys. We are at Catholic Dad Show, Doug on Tap series. This is episode 4, where we're talking about pro-life Doug. We're here joined with Doug Johnson. He is the husband to the famous...
Abby Johnson, yes.
who left Planned Parenthood and shook up the pro-life world.
Yes, she did.
And continues to do so. So Doug, I want to get into the whole spiel, mm-hmm. right? But I also really want to hear, what is Catholic fatherhood's role in the pro-life movement?
Okay.
Before we get there, I want to hear about how you went from being married to a Planned Parenthood director mm-hmm. to being just as pro-life as your wife.
Okay. So, wow. I don't know how far we can go back, but I'll go back a little ways. So when Abby and I met, we were working at a glass shop in College Station, Texas.
Together?
Yeah. I'd been there for a year. She came in to replace an office person, and she was already engaged when I met her. I actually went to the wedding, and that was fun. I had a date to my wife's wedding. And so anyway, the nice thing about her being married for that year is we got a year to get to know each other and become really close friends.
Yep.
And so whenever she was done, like he left, whatever happened there, and she was divorced and we were free to date, we went right into it. It was very easy transition. And in that time, we really didn't talk about abortion or pro-life things. I think she knew I was pro-life because we did have a coworker.
It's not a good first date conversation?
No. I guess not. It's not really an icebreaker.
Okay.
Yeah. But she'd already had her first abortion by the time I had met her. She just didn't talk about it. She actually talked about it like a miscarriage.
Wow.
And she did mention being pregnant, but she never mentioned having an abortion. And then I haven't really talked about this much, or it's not in any of the books, so this is an exclusive for you.
There we go.
So we had a coworker who lived with Abby. She's a little off, and I don't know. She wasn't the brightest bulb. I'm not calling her dumb or anything like that. She just didn't have much to say. She didn't work well. She was kind of there. I don't know. You've been around those people, right? Where they're just kind of floating.
Yeah.
And she had this boyfriend.
NPCs.
Yeah. What
was that? Non-player control.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. Okay. Yeah. From Jumanji, I guess.
Yeah.
She'd gotten pregnant with her boyfriend, and she was just—it was an automatic. Like they were going to have an abortion.
Wow.
And I had gone to a Protestant Christian school for high school, and so I was pro-life, but I wasn't very good at it. I didn't like live out my pro-lifeness, and I had really wasn't going to church that much at the time when this happened. Anyway,
sure.
And so I was like really upset about it because this is the first person I'd ever met that was even considering it. Like this is my first live and in-person experience with somebody considering abortion. And I just couldn't stand it. I'm calling people like, what do I do? How do I talk her out of it? And there was no talking about it. She ended up having the abortion. And Abby, who was her roommate at the time, was upset with her too because she's like, oh, she's just using it as a form of birth control. And so she kind of came off very pro-life in that conversation. And that was really the only conversation we'd ever had about pro-life, pro-choice was through this other young lady's experience.
Yeah.
And so moving right along in our relationship. And then the second abortion she had was from her first husband, I guess after they'd been together and now they're separating. And I was there for that. And so now she's choosing to get it and I'm her friend. And I'm like, I really don't think you should do this. But actually, I didn't want her to go through it alone. She'd kind of lost all her friends and couldn't tell her family.
In the divorce.
Yeah. And so, so she is either I be there as a support or I abandoned her completely.
Right.
And so I wasn't going to abandon her and not keep in mind we're in her early 20s. And people think, oh, you're an adult. Like, no, you're not. Like, I'm 44. I barely consider myself an adult.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like everybody expects you to make these super adult, wonderful decisions. Like when you're.
Well, they expect you to make perfect decisions.
Yeah. When you're in the dumbest part of your life, when you're just doing the dumbest things possible. And so I was there for that and witness a lot of what she went through. Like that was the one. So if you've seen Unplanned the movie, when she had the medication abortion.
Yeah.
That was the bathroom. Yes. That was my bathroom at my house.
Wow.
So that's where I dropped her off. And then she was there and it took forever to clean the blood off the baseboards and everything like that. So just to kind of get a little more intimate there.
Yeah.
What that was like. And then that happened, and we just didn't talk about it for a while. And then she decided she wanted to go back. She'd already volunteered for Planned Parenthood, which I never knew anything about.
Sure.
hid that from everyone she knew. And then she wanted to get back into doing that after the second abortion. I think I felt like it was more to, she was seeking confirmation. She did the right thing. Validation that she made the right decision.
Yeah.
In aborting two children. And so.
From Planned Parenthood.
Yes.
By working
so she
there.
Went to the same Planned Parenthood she got the second abortion at.
Yeah.
To volunteer there. And then ended up, they saw potential in her and they swept her up and she ends up
employee of the
working
month.
There. Yeah. Yep. And so she starts out answering phones and she goes into counseling and then she moves into community outreach. And then next thing you know, she's running the clinic.
And somewhere along the way, you guys got married.
Right before she started working there full time.
Okay. Got it.
But she was going in to get her master's degree in psychology because she wanted to be a counselor and she really wanted to counsel certain kind of people. I think sex offenders. She wanted to go into prisons and really talk to and really figure out that population of people,
yeah.
Pedophiles, and figure out what's going on there. How do we prevent that? What's happening in their brain to make that sort of attraction happen?
And, right.
So anyway, I was like, okay, so this Planned Parenthood employment is just to pay the bills. It's just a bump in the road. It's just a thing. And well, eventually she won't work there anymore because I couldn't stand it. I hated it. And, but I was like, I also saw her passion for helping women. She was like, oh, I'm trying to reduce the number of abortions through A, B, C, and D. And she would actually follow through on those things, but get a lot of pushback from her bosses. They're like, no, the money's in abortion. We're selling abortion, which is also in the movie, you know?
Right.
And so she's like, but we're a nonprofit. And they're like, this is the tax status. You know, we also like, why do you think you're able to drive that car? Because why? Because we can pay you money because we make money from this.
Yeah.
And so anyway, moving right along. We're married. She's working part-time, making pretty good money. I'm working part-time. That's when I was talking about that house. You could hear the wind blowing through the windows. And then we actually find out we're pregnant with our first kid. And I actually knew she was pregnant. I was like, you've got to be pregnant. There's no way you're not pregnant. Like, I don't know what it was, the way she smelled, the way she acted. Who knows?
You just knew something was
different. I just knew she was pregnant. And, oh, what are you saying? You know my body better than me? I was like, yes, I think so. Don't ever say that to your wife, by the way. Anyway.
Pro tip from Doug Johnson.
Yes, don't do that. It's okay to be right, but it's also okay if you're the only one that knows you're right.
Yeah, be right, but be quiet.
Yeah. So, and then she calls, she's like, oh, yeah, you were right, I'm pregnant. So, yeah, score one to 500.
Yeah.
You know, and so she calls me, and that was a big, man, what are we going to do? Because we have no money. But then we end up on WIC and all the programs. And then, so I graduated that year. And so we were married like 2 months and then got pregnant.
Okay.
And so find out like less than half a year into our marriage that we're pregnant. And so, life's coming at us real fast. And so we moved back to where we knew there were jobs. I started teaching, and then that's when she started moving up the ranks real fast. Yeah, once we moved back to Bryan College Station.
Yeah.
And so she started moving up real fast. And they're like, oh, yeah, we're grooming you to run this whole outfit. And she, of course, that tickles her ego a little bit. Like, here she is, really young, like mid-20s, late 20s, somewhere in there. Like, I think the youngest to run a Planned Parenthood. And they even kind of lowballed her on what they paid her because she was young.
Right.
And so now I'm thinking like, well, I guess this is our life. I don't want to leave my wife. We have a kid together. I'm not going to abandon that. So now I'm just kind of accepting this. And I'm also accepting the talking points. And I'm starting to regurgitate it. So I'm kind of caught up in the mix too with Planned Parenthood. So there was a time definitely where
You're at least modeling the pro-choice narrative.
Yes, and I'm defending what my wife does by sharing the arguments. And,
okay.
And when somebody says, ooh, man, like when you see these people in these really tough situations, like the really hard sob stories, the 1% stories, right?
Yeah.
And you do catch them every once in a while. You're like, oh, yeah, I could see why they'd want to get an abortion. And you start to support that.
Yeah.
And then she went to that meeting where she kind of got reprimanded, and then she also went to another meeting where she got in trouble for questioning the quota, and then she starts coming home and saying like, I don't know if this is where I want to be. I'm like, what's going on here? What is this transitional life crisis?
Yeah.
When we're on this trajectory, why aren't we staying on it? And also she would like, we were going to church. We were going to the Episcopal church. So Catholic without all the values.
Right.
And so we were going to that church. And after church, she'd be like, I got to run by work real quick. Like, I think she's going to get something off her desk. No, she's logging in and doing work. And me and Grace are sitting out in the car. And I'm like, get your butt up. Let's go. At least drop us off at home before you do something this ridiculous. Like, right. She was caught up in work. Like, she, that was her focus.
Okay.
And so, and that was when we talked about intimacy on the last thing, like, that really got in the way of that. Like, it was her alcoholism. Okay.
Okay. Workaholic type
yes.
of thing. Yeah.
And so, anyway, and then that starts to fade a little. She's like, I don't know if I want to put so much time and energy into this. I don't know if this is where I need to be. I don't know if this is what I'm supposed to do.
Sure.
And then the ultrasound guided abortion happens where she sees it and that flips a switch in her. And now she's like, I don't even know what to do with that. I had no idea what it looked like. They've lied to me all this time saying they don't feel anything. There's nothing there. It doesn't look like a baby. And this is after piecing babies back together, mind you. Right.
She was in that room.
In the POC lab. Yeah. Products of conception where they piece babies back together to make sure they got everything out.
Yep.
So there's no infection. And so now she actually saw a baby swat a cannula, the tube they used to suck the baby out.
Right.
And struggle to get away.
Yeah.
And she's like, okay, I have to process that.
Right.
And so, got to a point where she couldn't take it anymore. And, I think if you've read the book, you know the story, she ends up going over to the Coalition for Life, which was right across the street, calls them. And next thing you know, we are pro-life. We're in the pro-life movement. But even with Abby, like, she would go in and talk to Sean Carney, who's part of all the story, head of the Coalition for Life and now 40 Days for Life now.
Right.
And be like, hey, I'm not totally against it. I think women should still have the ability to choose abortion. Oh, I'm not against birth control. And he'd be like, hey, you're new to this. Like, I'm just glad you're here and you're not going to work there anymore. Like,
he loved her where she was at.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I'm forever, forever grateful to him for doing that. And
for you, was it a relief? Like, she comes home and says, I'm leaving Planned Parenthood.
Okay. So that's the next thing. So I knew it again, right? I was teaching. We were doing whatever state testing we were doing at the time. I'm in the hallway, my phone rings, and I knew she'd been struggling with wanting to stay. And, she calls me and she's in tears. She's like, you'll never guess where I'm at. And I go, you're at the Coalition for Life. She goes, how did you know? I was like, I just knew it was time, babe. Like, I just.
Wow.
I knew it. Like, yeah. So I guess Holy Spirit without me knowing it's the Holy Spirit, right?
Yes.
And then I was like, I just knew it. And she's like, well, I've got a story to tell you. And like, when I get home, we got a lot of talking to do. And sure enough, man, we got home. A lot of talking. She was still in tears from the day. Like, she didn't cry when she saw the ultrasound. And she didn't cry for 2 weeks after that, or however long it took her to go into the Planned Parenthood or to go to the Coalition for Life.
Right.
But walking in those doors, the waterworks stopped and it didn't start for like stop for a long time. And so, and then we're like, okay, we're just going to move on with our life. And she's going to go run another clinic or that doesn't do abortions or just a OB-GYN clinic or something like that. And I'll keep teaching. We'll move on with our lives. And then next thing you know, media swarm, she gets picked up in that, and now she's speaking, and now she's testifying in front of Congress, and then we get a book deal, and then...
So now you and your family are no longer just like, hey, I tolerated the pro-choice stuff. I even mimicked some of the narrative. This is Doug.
Yeah.
And now I can go back to kind of my values that I never really knew how to express anyways.
Yes.
To, oh, by the way, you guys are like the poster couple for the pro-life movement.
Yeah, and Abby talks about this, like healing in public, basically. Uh-huh. Like healing from everything we went through. And not just that, like evolving and growing in public. Like learning your new values in public. Like she said something one time in support of some bill that had exceptions for rape and incest. And they're like, oh, so you don't care about these babies? And she's like, I don't know, we'll go back and get them. And then she learned real quickly in politics, you don't go back. You don't go back and pick that up.
Yeah.
And so then she's like, okay, now I'm no exceptions. Like that was a lesson she had to learn publicly because she got attacked by the pro-life movement for not getting it perfect in that moment.
Right.
But thankfully, we had other pro-lifers who took the time to call Abby and be like, let me explain to you why people are upset that you said that.
Right.
Like here you are, this new poster child. You're the pretty new toy in the pro-life movement. And you said the wrong thing. You represented incorrectly, or you didn't represent everyone the way they want to be represented. And so we kind of got to.
So this should come as no surprise, but every movement has an ugly side.
Mm-hmm.
But you guys have been attacked way more by the pro-choice side of things. But even within the pro-life movement, there have been times where you felt like they've been
Well, one of the things that got me on the pro-choice train when Abby was working there was death threats. We got death threats from pro-lifers. And
because she was the director of a Planned mm-hmm. Parenthood.
And that put me in protection mode.
Pro-life my foot, right? Yeah. That's kind of what you were thinking.
Yeah. I'm like, now you're the bad guys. And so even when Abby left, I did not trust the pro-life movement all that much because I was like, one of you did this and I want to know who because I want to confront that. I still, to this day, want to confront that person.
Right.
To let them know all you did was cause my wife to dig her heels in deeper.
Yeah.
You changed nothing.
Right.
And you made your whole movement look like crap.
Yeah.
Like you're a black eye on what you're supposed to be doing. And so don't do that.
You know, yeah.
And I kind of want an apology. Like, I don't have to have it. I'm fine without it, but I wouldn't mind an apology. Like, you know, and
you're open to it because you yourself went through an evolution and a growing phase. Mm-hmm. But there is something about the hostility in that person's.
Yes.
And hopefully their heart has changed.
Because I want it to fade away in everyone. I want that to just go away.
Amen.
Especially in the pro-life movement. And like, and it is fading. Yeah. There's a lot of, you can't not change your heart.
We found something more effective than hate.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
And yelling.
Yeah.
And nasty signs and all the other little things.
Yep.
And you know, even with graphic signs, they have their place, just not outside an abortion clinic.
Probably not.
They have their, Holocaust Museum. You ever been in it?
Yep.
You know what you're going in to see.
Yep.
And all that imagery is very important. We need to see that.
Right.
We need that history.
Yeah.
The same, we need these pictures and images. And Abby needed to see that ultrasound guided abortion.
But we need to be prudent and charitable about the display.
Yes. There's an R rating on R-rated movies for a reason. So you can decide, I don't need to see it that way. I don't need to learn about it that way.
Right.
My kids don't need to learn about it that way.
At a pro-life march, why would my kids need to see that?
Yes.
And at a pro-life march, kids should be welcomed.
Yes.
So we got to reconcile those two realities. And probably by changing some of the signs might be a good way to reconcile those realities.
Right. Yeah. I think when we ask, like, how do we teach our kids about abortion? Well, we start with life first. We start how life begins. We teach them that there's a life in there, okay? And so let's build on that. And so let's see. And they actually say more women change their mind with images of living children in the womb.
Yeah.
In fact, Abby said every time they would come in for their ultrasound and they'd find out it was twins, 100% leave. I can't kill two babies.
Wow.
Yeah. They're like, ooh, there's two of them in there. I'm going to have them.
Yeah.
I got to have these twins.
Wow.
You know, and I know I have twins.
Yeah.
And, you know, actually, you know, our last son, he was meant to be a twin. And we found out real early on we were having another set of twins and then miscarried them about a week later.
Wow.
And so just in being pro-life, you want to meet all your kids. You know, we talked about in the intimacy thing, like you've had all those miscarriages. Like you want to meet and know all your kids. You know eventually you will.
Yeah.
On the other side of
heaven,
this life, you know? Yeah. And so I have to be comfortable in knowing having had twins and then having another single that was supposed to be a twin, there was a joy and a sadness because that other one
profound.
Didn't come sliding out with them, you know, and like they didn't come out arm in arm. Hey, we're twins. We're here to make an adventure for your life, you know, because twins are an adventure. I'll tell you what. And so, but now I have to just be okay with knowing eventually in the future, in the next life, I will meet this kid. And we're all going to be together as a family. That's when that'll happen.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I have eight kids, but we have more to meet later, you know? And so, like seeing life, I think, is what changes people's minds. So these graphic signs, they're really, I think they're done out of anger. And when you do things out of anger, you're just
or fear, or fear that the beauty of a baby isn't enough. We have to use the fear of, okay, so we're running against studio time.
Yes.
So we got just a couple of minutes left. Catholic fatherhood. What is the role of Catholic fatherhood in the pro-life movement, or what would you hope it would be? How can we as men step up?
Well, I think we definitely need to teach our sons and daughters, like, so be the example your daughter wants to look for, and be for your son, be like, okay, this is how you want to approach relationships. If you want to go into marriage, discern marriage, like this is what it looks like. And so, and most importantly, have that person know that you're in it for all of it. You want all everything that comes with marriage, including children, like, because that's part of it. And if you're not accepting that, then marriage isn't for you.
You know?
Like, you skip that. You know, relationship, like, you, sex, I guess you're not going to have that.
Right.
Because the
you're not willing to follow through all the way.
Right.
Right.
And so I think we need to have raised men that know how to respond to life, to be accepting of, happy of, like, rejoice in it. And knowing that, yeah, it's going to be hard, but, like, you get to do this. Like, this is a privilege. Like, this is a wonderful gift you're going to have, that raising these children. And I was asked one time, what's the one thing you want to hear when you get into heaven? You know, like with that old interviewer behind the stage or curtain or whatever.
Yeah.
He's like, what do you want to hear when you get into heaven? And I said, my answer was, thanks for bringing so many. And I want to make sure I get all these kids into heaven.
Beautiful.
I'm like, that's my goal. And not just my kids, their friends, their kids. Like, yeah. I want a generation after generation after generation, a legacy of kids that are getting into heaven. That's what I want. And so that's what I want to hear when I get there. Thanks for bringing so many.
I love it.
I think that's what Catholic fathers need to be, like, have that in their head. I'm going to bring a bunch.
So just to emphasize, before we grab a sign, before we hit the voting booth, before anything else, love fiercely and follow through all the way on love.
Starts in your home.
And don't be afraid to move it then to your neighborhood before you move it to your politics, before you move it to your, you know, and just love the neighbors,
right.
love your kids' friends. And bring so many to heaven.
Our values, the government doesn't get to tell us what our values are. We decide what they are and radiate from the home out.
Amen.
That's how it should be.
Good. Hey, Doug, we have loved our time with you, and we hope to get to do this again. Thank you guys so much for joining us on the Catholic Dad Show. We do believe that Catholic fatherhood can change the world. You can like, follow, subscribe, and share, and you can also keep following Doug. I follow him on social media, and he has got so much wisdom. He starts a lot of interesting and fabulous dialogue. It's a blast. So, Doug, how can we follow you?
It's all on all of them. I do three, the big three, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, mostly Facebook, because I like to write a book. And so they're all Doug on Tap. And so you come on there and we can have good, fun conversations.
Awesome. Let's all be the pro-life dad that changes not just the world, but the neighborhood and their family. You guys, Catholic fatherhood can change the world. Let's go do it. Thanks for joining us. Thank you, Doug.
Thank you.